Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Between 2014 and 2016, nearly 16 million voters were removed from the rolls, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. That is 16 million voters in just 2 years. So why isn't this getting more attention? We are hearing about Georgia and North Dakota, but we're not hearing much about how the Supreme Court's decision to gut the Voting Rights Act in 2013 has negatively impacted the right to vote. So where are we today? Well, hundreds of thousands of people have been purged from voter rolls in Georgia, one of the country's most closely watched elections. If Democrat Stacey Abrams wins, she would be the first Black woman governor in the country. Republican Brian Kemp is currently serving as the state's Secretary of State, responsible for enforcing voting laws. And former President Jimmy Carter is calling on him to resign. A number of other organizations are also saying that he should step down. In North Dakota, the Supreme Court recently declined to rule on a law which requires that a voter's ID has a street address to be considered valid. Around 70,000 voters could be affected by this requirement, which poses a particular obstacle for Native Americans who do not have street addresses. Now, most voter suppression laws have been put in place by Republicans. In 2000, Florida Republicans purged 58,000 alleged felons from the voting rolls, and since then, voter suppression has gotten worse. Joining us to talk about how we got here and what we can do about it are two guests. Phyllis Young is the Get Out the Vote coordinator for the Lakota People's Law Project. Phyllis is a well-known Standing Rock water protector and leads hashtag Green the Res campaign to bring renewable energy to the people of Standing Rock. Phyllis Young served as a tribal council member from 2012 to 2015. She co-founded Women of All Red Nations with Madonna Thunderhawk back in 1978 and served as a board member of the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian for 15 years. Hi, Phyllis. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. Greetings.
Greetings. We are also joined by Carol Anderson, professor of African American Studies at Emory University and author of many books, including One Person, No Vote, How Voter Suppression is Destroying Our Democracy. In her book, she argues that Donald Trump won the presidential election due to voter suppression. Carol joins us from Emory University in Atlanta. Hi, Carol. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for all the work you do. You know, Carol, how do you explain this? Georgia and North Dakota, they're getting a lot of attention, as they should, but the 16 million number from the Brennan Center for Justice report is not getting much attention at all. I mean, we're talking about 16 million voters who've been purged in just 2 years between 2014 and 2016?
Yes, and when you drill down on those numbers, you'll find that the majority are minorities. You'll also find that the way that we don't see it is the way that voter suppression works, in that it's very bureaucratic, it's very routine and methodical, so it doesn't have the kind of visual power, say, that a Selma on the Edmund Pettus Bridge does. And so you can wipe out 16 million people just with the stroke of a pen. And that's why we don't see it.
And it's mostly people of color.
Yes. So, for instance, in Ohio, where the John Husted, who is the Secretary of State, he wiped out 2 million voters, 1.2 million of those simply because they hadn't voted regularly. The people who don't vote regularly are overwhelmingly minorities, young people, and poor people. And the law is clear that you can't just wipe somebody out simply because they don't vote in every election. I mean, you don't lose your right to religion simply because you don't go to church every Sunday. But here, it has allowed Republican secretaries of state to use that to cull the electorate, to shift those who are able to vote to a demographic that is more heavily skewed Republican.
And Carol, who's doing this? Is it mostly Republicans?
mostly Republicans. I mean, where you'll see the Democrats involved in voter suppression is with gerrymandering. But where you see this kind of thing with voter ID and voter roll purges and closing polling stations and not providing enough resources to polling stations in minority precincts, that whole array is where you see the Republicans, particularly when you have a Republican governor and a Republican state legislature.
Phyllis, we will talk about what's happening in North Dakota and the work that you're all doing there in a minute. But what are your thoughts on the larger picture here? 16 million people have been purged just from 2014 to 2016, and yet we're not really hearing much about it. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's it is a national crisis, and it's a system that has never worked. The Electoral College needs to be abolished, and the two-party system needs to be abolished. It's ancient, and it's racist, and it's an institutional barrier, and we have to start something new.
Well, and Carol, Margaret Sullivan in the Washington Post wrote a piece called "Voter Suppression is a Crucial Story in America, but Broadcast News Mostly Shrugs." And she looked at some data and found that the cable shows are barely talking about this. I mean, they are talking about Georgia and North Dakota, but not the bigger picture. Why? Why isn't this getting more attention?
And I think it's because the news requires, what does it say? If it bleeds, it leads. And so we don't see the fire. We don't see the flames. We don't see the explosions. And so to talk about, well, the National Voter Registration Act says that and that is why this is so effective. In Georgia alone, so you've talked about between 2014 and 2016, the Brennan Center identified 16 million people who had been purged from the rolls. But in Georgia, from 2016 to 2018, 10.6% of the electorate has been wiped off the voter rolls by Brian Kemp, over 10%. And still, we don't get the kind of sense of urgency about what this means when you have elected officials taking away American citizens' right to vote.
And Carol, in your book, One Person, No Vote, you argue that Donald Trump won the election because of voter suppression.
Oh, yes. And you know, when you think about it, so again, we go for 16 million people wiped off the rolls. We know that those numbers are skewed toward minorities. And we know that the majority of minorities did not vote for Donald Trump. We also know that, for instance, when you look at Wisconsin, which is a heavily voter-suppressed state, where Governor Scott Walker and the state legislature targeted Milwaukee for voter suppression. Milwaukee is where 70% of the state's African-American population lives. Via voter ID and then all kinds of chicanery with the departments of motor vehicles, when they were open, when they weren't open, where they weren't, etc. What we saw between 2016 and between 2012 and 2016, there were 60,000 fewer votes in Wisconsin in the presidential election. 68% of that drop came out of Milwaukee alone. Donald Trump won Wisconsin by a little over 20,000 votes.
Wow. Carol Anderson is author of One Person, No Vote and professor of African American Studies at Emory University. Phyllis Young is the Get Out the Vote coordinator for the Lakota People's Law Project and is a well-known Standing Rock water protector, a longtime indigenous rights activist. Phyllis, you were saying that the system is racist. And what's amazing about what's happening in Indian country, I mean, it's a great time for the media to actually educate people about the history of Native Americans in this country. We didn't get the Indian Citizenship Act until 1924, which ensured that all Native Americans were actually U.S. citizens. And on a Standing Rock Facebook page, I was reading by someone that, you know, and on some radio shows, people are calling in saying, oh, we'll just get an address. And someone said, excuse me, you need to learn your history. You know, one of the reasons why people don't have addresses is because when people were pushed onto reservations, the government didn't pay for that. So can you talk a little bit about the history? Because that's so important here.
I think we're at a threshold in time where we are going to tell our story, no longer mm-hmm. his story. So we have 33 treaties with the United States. When I say we, I mean Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota. We are Dakota territory. That has never been changed. That is ratified by Congress. So our vote is directly tied to the land. And for them to attack us through the land by forcing us to have a street on Mother Earth, we understand that what they're doing to us, they're not only attacking our freedom to vote, but our freedom to live on our own land without marks and boundaries. So it's deeper than ever, and the legislature knows what they are doing. First of all, we have the last treaty in 1868, and in Article 6, we negotiated that we would be citizens of the United States. So ours predates the 1924 Citizenship Act, which was a national act for all Indian people. Ours is in 1868, and we are guaranteed the freedoms and immunities of citizenship of the United States. So we had that ratified by Congress in 1869. So it's statutory law. And we are dual citizens because we retained our citizenship. So we are Lakota, Dakota first. Our territory is Dakota. We have been invaded, and now they're trying to push. We're not subject to state law, so we do not have to participate. So we're doing it by choice. We're exercising our freedom under the treaties, which are not a myth but statutory law. So we know what the legislature did in 2013, after the election, a surprise election by the Native people in North Dakota who made a difference. There are five homelands here in North Dakota yet. There are 14 still in North and South Dakota. So although we represent only almost 2% of the indigenous people in this country that are left, we still believe in our right to vote, and we have a history. We have a very sophisticated internal election process. So no one can tell us that, quote, the voter fraud. We know it's a political question, and so when they did their House legislation immediately after the election of a woman candidate in North Dakota for the United States Senate, as well as the Democratic Party, and who are the are not the majority either in this state or in the United States. So they had to initiate and force their Senate, their House bill, 1332 and 1333. There was litigation in the federal district court, and he upheld the rights of the Native people. It was Turtle Mountain who filed the action, and they have more than the population we do. They have like 13,000 voters. So altogether, we made a difference in we overwhelmingly voted all of the indigenous people in North Dakota in 2012, and so we've been under assault for 6 years, and they finally they passed 1339, 2 years after the first legislation. So three acts they went through to force us to have street addresses. So we're living in the heartland of America. We're free. The farmers that live here, that coexist with us, don't have street addresses. So it's being forced on us on a fast track because we live in the number one development for oil and gas. So it's trying to create the little boxes for us so they know where the pockets of mineral development is. So we know it's an attack on our land as well as our people and the freedoms that we have, including the right to vote.
You refer to Heidi Heitkamp, who is North Dakota's Democratic senator, and she won her race by only 3,000 votes, and 46,000 Native Americans live in North Dakota. Most of them support Democrats. And as you said, this voter ID law was introduced in 2013 by Republicans. And there's a good piece in the New York Times by Tristan Atone, who is associate editor for tribal affairs at High Country News. It's called "Democrats Don't Take the Native American Voters for Granted." And he pointed out that Democrats are fuming over the disenfranchisement of Native voters now that a Senate seat is at risk, but there was very little attention in 2013 when the ID law was first introduced. Would you agree with that?
I do. I do agree with that. It had to go through the litigation and the timeliness of it. I mean, politically, they knew I represent the Four Directions. I want to correct you on I'm not the coordinator for Lakota Law Project. I do work for them in other areas, but presently I am the field coordinator for the Four Directions, who are advocates for voter protection and preserving our vote in Indian Country. They have several years of advocacy in the state of Montana, in the state of Nevada, in the state of South Dakota, and they've come here. So this is where we're utilizing all the expertise. We've gotten the overview and overlap of a database and the geography of potentially where streets will be for ourselves. We're laying out the mapping system for ourselves as a result of what's happening here to force us to have streets. So it's not a timely. Usually the Supreme Court gives us ample time. This one is not giving us because of Kavanaugh. Not voting was an advantage for them because then it's remanded to the lower court, and that is held up. So the appeals court is decision to support the legislative acts is upheld by the appeals court. So strategically, politically, by the Republican Party, yes, in the court system, there's judges that have been appointed by Trump in the appeals court. So we clearly have a picture of what is going on politically to suppress our votes, to eliminate our votes, and by doing it on street addresses, putting obstacles on our land.
Phyllis Young is field coordinator for Four Directions. They advocate for preserving the vote in Indian Country. She's also a well-known Standing Rock water protector. Today, we're also joined by Carol Anderson, professor of African American Studies at Emory University, and the author of many books, including One Person, One Vote. No Vote. It would be nice, One Person, One Vote, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
One Person, No Vote. How Voter Suppression is Destroying Our Democracy. In her book, she argues that Donald Trump won the presidential election due to voter suppression. So this is getting attention, but when you connect the dots, what about the bigger picture? 16 million people were removed from voter rolls across the country between 2014 and 2016. If you have any questions for Carol or Phyllis, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Carol, what can people do to find out if they have been purged, and what can they do to get back on the rolls?
Right. And so one of the key things is to go to the Secretary of State's, your state's Secretary of State's webpage, and key in your name, your last name, and there's some other data that it needs, and it pops up, and it will tell you if your status is pending, if you have been removed, because part of what happens is that with these purges, people basically aren't told. And so when they go to vote, they're not on the rolls, and then they're getting the big runaround, and it just becomes a mess. So that is one of the things, is to be very proactive. I know that when we had our registration period was open, I checked my voter webpage every week, and then I printed off a copy with the date and time on it so that I had documented proof that I was, in fact, a registered voter and that this was my polling place. One of the things I'd like to add, Phyllis talked about how the Republicans crafted the laws knowing that the way that you would attack the land and the people's right to vote was to go after the one thing that they didn't have was an address. That is how these laws are crafted, and that's why they're so efficient and so effective, because they look reasonable. People say, well, everybody's got an ID. But the way that these legislatures craft the laws, it's certain types of ID. So like in Alabama, you need a government-issued photo ID, but they said that public housing ID did not count, as if that's not a government-issued photo ID. And that's because 71% of those in public housing in Alabama are African-American. Then they said, but a driver's license will count. Then the government shut down the Department of Motor Vehicles in those Black Belt counties. So what you do is you create an obstacle, voter ID, based on the lie of voter fraud. And then you create an obstacle to that obstacle. That's how the Republicans are able to suppress the vote. And that's what they have to do, because their policies, which have veered so far to the right, no longer resonate with the majority of Americans, in a, particularly in an increasingly diverse America.
Phyllis, before we let you go, can you tell us how listeners can support your efforts? The New York Times had a profile piece about what you're all doing, and O.J. Simmons, co-executive director of Four Directions, said that people don't understand how much it costs a tribe to make sure that every tribal member has the right to vote. The tribes have invested thousands of dollars in equipment, man hours, meetings, and these things are not cheap. So what's the best way we can support your efforts to ensure that people can vote?
We are doing an appeal, and it's out there for fundraising, and we are overwhelmed in our enrollment office to get new IDs. We're trying to start a second operation. We have 6 days left. We think that we have to hire new staff. We have a website set up for Standing Rock, and the number that we have established is 701-854-VOTE. So if people want to call in and ask questions or seek ways they can help, that's posted. So we appreciate the rest of America, how they have answered our call, how we're addressing a freedom. An individual right to vote is an absolute freedom that we have to fight for. Our ancestors fought for our freedoms, My grandfather was a code talker in the First World War. I was raised on VA pension. I have to claim being an American. So if Americans can respond to help in any way, we thank you for your past support and your generosity. So we can do this together, and we have to restore the balance of democracy and the principles and standards at the highest level. So we're all in it together. I want to thank you for allowing me to speak. All due respect to my black sister, we're going to do justice in the end. So thank you.
Thank you, my sister. Thank you.
Well, Phyllis, we'd love to have you back. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Phyllis Young is field coordinator for Four Directions, who advocate for preserving the vote in Indian Country. Phyllis really is an icon. If you're not familiar with her work, take a look at our website and read more about her. She's a well-known Standing Rock protector. In 1978, she co-founded Women of All Red Nations with Madonna Thunderhawk and served as a board member of the National Museum of the American Indian for 15 years. Thank you so much, Phyllis. Coming up after the break, we'll continue speaking with Carol Anderson, professor of African American Studies at Emory University and author of the book One Person, No Vote: How Voter Suppression is Destroying Our Democracy. In that book, she argues that Donald Trump won the presidential election due to voter suppression. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This year, Americans are voting early, often. Record turnout in some states is as high for the midterms as it is for a presidential race. So far, about 18 million Americans have voted early. What might that tell us about the results? The voting explosion across America. Next time on 1A.
You can hear 1A 1/2 hour from now at 11 o'clock, right after Your Call here on KALW. This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion, or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. 8255 toll free. You can also send an email to yourcall@kalw.org. You may post a comment or question to the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about money in politics. The Center for Responsive Politics projects that more than $5 billion will be spent on November's election, next week's election, really, making it the most expensive midterm ever. Sheldon Edelson is shelling out more than $113 million to support Republicans. He's at the very top of the list, followed by Tom Steyer, spending $51 million to elect Democrats. There's about $1 billion in dark money. So we'll follow the money and find out about the status on efforts to get money out of politics. Today, we are talking about voter suppression, an issue that does get attention but deserves far more, especially given that 16 million voters were removed from the rolls across the country between 2014 and 2016. And today we're joined by Carol Anderson. She argues that Donald Trump won the election due to voter suppression. She writes about that in her book, One Person, No Vote: How Voter Suppression is Destroying Our Democracy. Carol is professor of African American Studies at Emory University. And Carol, you know, we often hear, or at least we used to hear, that Donald Trump basically won the Electoral College by about 77,000 votes in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. So why don't we hear more about what you're arguing, that he actually won this election due to voter suppression?
And I think it goes back to several things, is that, one, Americans like to think that the system works, that democracy functions. We get the veneer. We see people running for election. We hear the debates. We see the polls. Who's in front? Then there's an election, and we go vote. And then there are the returns at the end. And so it looks like the system works. But when you start peeling back the veneer of that system, you see how frayed it is, how vulnerable it is, and in these key areas, how racism and has and classism has systematically suppressed the votes of millions of American citizens. For instance, you know, we're talking about these purges. One of the big ways for that people have been purged was through a system called cross-check. Cross-check had been heralded by Kansas's Secretary of State, Kris Kobach, who is now running for governor, and who was the was appointed by Donald Trump for the Election Integrity Commission. And the way cross-check says that it's working is to stop all of this voter fraud, all of this double voting, people being registered in multiple states and then going from state to state, tainting elections. And it says that it's looking at people by their first name, middle name, last four of their date of birth, last four of their Social Security and a suffix, junior, senior, that sort of thing. But actually, that's not what it does. It really focuses in on the last name and kind of sort of the first. What that means then is that because minorities are share the most 85 of the most 100 common last names in America, is that minorities then are overrepresented in the purge list, so that whites are underrepresented by 8%. African Americans overrepresented by 45%. Asian Americans overrepresented by over 30%. And Hispanics overrepresented by 24%. That's the danger behind those big numbers in the purge.
You know, it's overwhelming, Carol. What do we do with this information? I mean, given how far it has gone since 2000, I was just reading about the alleged felons who were voting, who were purged from the voting rolls, 40% black, 58,000
yes.
people, and it's just
yes.
gotten worse.
Right. And in that purge that Catherine Harris did in the 2000 election in Florida, the majority, the vast majority of those who were purged were not felons. Therefore,
right.
they were eligible to vote. And mm. that is what happens. And so, again, what we hear from these really aggressive secretaries of state is that they're just maintaining the voter rolls in order to stop voter fraud. They're making sure that dead people aren't on the rolls. They're making sure that people who have moved out of the voting district are no longer on the rolls. But that's not what's going on. What's going on is this kind of systematic purging of people who are more than likely not going to vote for Republicans. That's what we're seeing by these Republican secretaries of state. And so what we can do then is that we, you know, basically when it comes to midterm elections or elections in general, we haven't paid much attention to who's running for secretary of state because we haven't really kind of figured out what the secretary of state does. But what the secretary of state actually is responsible for what happens in our elections. So while we have a Kris Kobach or a Brian Kemp, we also have like an Alex Padilla in California who looked at Oregon, Oregon that has one of the highest voter turnout rates in the nation, and its Secretary of State was not satisfied with that and said, we can do better, and went for and launched automatic voter registration where people now have to opt out of registering to vote instead of having to go through all of the hurdles to opt in.
Where is the opposition to all of this? Because groups like the ACLU, there's a number of new voting rights groups, there's voting rights groups of color doing really great work on the ground.
Amazing work.
But where are the Democrats in all of this? I mean, you just have to wonder, if things have gotten worse since 2000, what are they doing?
And so what we're seeing, and I've got to say that where you began to see this churn happening clearly in 2000, and the Republicans have been very good at messaging voter fraud, voter fraud, mm-hmm. voter fraud. We're trying to protect the integrity of the ballot box. And so it looks like when you're pushing back on that, that what you're actually saying, although it's not what you're saying, is that you just want anybody to be able to run up there and vote. You want to taint the election. So this is the kind of narrative box that the Democrats have been put in. They're fighting their way out of it. One of the things that we're seeing is that former Attorney General Eric Holder and President Barack Obama have formed an organization that's going after one of the most insidious methods of voter suppression, which is gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. And what gerrymandering does, and I will talk about Wisconsin, because Wisconsin kind of gives you that kind of quintessential feel of it. After the 2010 election, the Republicans locked themselves in a hotel room, sequestered themselves in a hotel room with some powerful mapping software, and began to redraw the legislative boundaries, districts for the state. Now, constitutionally, that's what is supposed to happen. You're supposed to, after a census, redraw the boundaries to reflect the population shifts. But what they did, their two goals was, one, to eliminate the number of competitive districts. Because when you eliminate competitive districts, voter turnout goes down. Because you already know who's going to win. I mean, he's running unopposed. There's no way that so-and-so is going to win. So people just don't show up. In competitive races, people show up. The second goal that they had was that regardless of how many votes they received, they would always have the majority of seats in the state legislature. By the time the first election happened in 2012, Democrats received 52% of the vote, but only 39% of the seats. Mm-hmm. And the subsequent elections, it got worse. And that's what extreme partisan gerrymandering does. It creates these districts where the politicians get to choose their voters instead of the voters getting to choose who their elected officials will be. And it also makes those politicians immune from voters' will by the way that these districts are crafted, so that it's really hard to dislodge them. That is why we see national policy moving in one direction, for instance, on the Affordable Care Act or on the tax law, while we see the American people in their polling, in their desires, in their wants, moving in the opposite direction. So gerrymandering has created a completely unrepresentative House of Representatives. So you see Holder and Obama now going for nonpartisan redistricting commissions to eliminate that pernicious evil that is in the system, and to create districting that is fair, that is balanced, and that is responsive to the will of the voters.
Can you elaborate more on gerrymandering, Carol? We've done a lot of shows about gerrymandering. David Daley has a great book called Rat F,
yes.
The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy. And according
yes.
to David Daley and the Brennan Center for Justice, in order for Democrats to take back the House and certain districts, they have to win by about 11 margin points. So can
yes.
you explain why that is?
And that is because not only they drew these districts with this powerful mapping software that has this almost like, I don't want to say Facebook, Cambridge Analytica data that shows the proclivities of different houses, different streets. Is this a Prius driving, latte sipping neighborhood here? Okay, so how do we diffuse that, what they're thinking as liberal neighborhood? And so they began to annex it, to craft that district and put it into a larger district that is overwhelmingly, say, white and conservative, and to overwhelm those liberal voters by what they call cracking them, by splitting them up into multiple districts so their voice is never heard. And so in order to dislodge these folks who are voting to gut health insurance and protections for people with pre-existing conditions. It requires such a massive turnout. And what the Republicans count on is that Democratic voters basically don't show up. That's what they've been banking on. Voter suppression is designed to do that. As I said, gerrymandering is designed to make you believe that the system is so rigged, it doesn't you shouldn't participate. It doesn't matter if you participate. But that is wrong. It does matter if you participate. That is why they're so afraid of what's been called the blue wave or the blue tsunami. That is why they're so afraid of this kind of massive early voting turnout that they're seeing. That is why they have done all of this voter suppression, because they are afraid of democracy.
Mm. Carol Anderson is professor of African American Studies at Emory University, author of several books, including One Person, No Vote, How Voter Suppression is Destroying Our Democracy. She argues that Donald Trump won the election due to voter suppression. And if you have any questions for Carol about voter suppression and gerrymandering, what are your thoughts about this and how to tackle it? I mean, it is pretty overwhelming when you think about all the damage that this administration is doing. And Carol argues he shouldn't even be in the White House. I mean, if it weren't for voter suppression, he probably would not have won. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We have an email from Jane who says, the most effective method of stealing elections is one which has been in place for the past few elections, electronic software manipulation of the vote counting machines, and this is not getting attention. So, Carol, have you been keeping up with what's happening in Texas, where if people vote like a straight Democratic Party, at the top, it says they voted for Ted Cruz, not Beto O'Rourke?
Isn't that something? Yes, and you know, that's happening here as well. So the Georgia NAACP has now sued because there are voting machines here. So, as I said, Brian Kemp is our Secretary of State, and he was warned during the Obama years that our voting machines were vulnerable to hacking. Our voting machines run on Windows 2000 and do not have a paper trail. And he refused until there was a convention, a DEF CON convention in Las Vegas, I think in 2016 or 2017. And boom, some hackers who weren't even experts in voting software got into the machine within the whole Georgia system within a matter of minutes. Then he was willing to accept some federal dollars. But whether those machines have been changed, because during this election, people are screenshotting that when they're voting for Stacey Abrams, his Democratic opponent, that when they get to the final page, it's showing that they voted for Brian Kemp. So the votes are being switched here as well. So, yes, and that is why we have to overwhelm the ballot box.
Right. That's the only way to do it, right?
Yes.
At this point.
Because at this point, because what we have to do is to get these folks out of power who are in power based on voter suppression. And we have to elect people who fully believe in the vibrancy of democracy, who fully believe that American citizens have the right to vote, and who are thinking through ways to ensure that that happens. Until we do that, and Ari Berman wrote a beautiful piece on this, until we do that, we will continue to have to spend all of this time in court, all of this time screenshotting, all of this time trying to figure out how do we move around, how do we simply exercise our basic right to vote.
Well, if you have friends in Texas, please let them know about what is happening with these machines.
Yes.
The Washington Post quotes an election advisory from Director of Elections Keith Ingram. It said, we have heard from a number of people voting on Hart e-slate machines that when they voted straight ticket, it appeared to them that the machine had changed one or more of the selections to a candidate from a different party. So if you vote for Beto O'Rourke for Senator of Texas, all of a sudden, Ted Cruz pops up. He goes on to write, "This can be caused by the voter taking keyboard actions before a page has fully appeared on the e-slate, thereby deselecting the pre-filled selection of that party's candidate." So they're basically saying, if something looks wrong, ask a volunteer. Carol, on this issue, I mean, a lot of people who used to embrace technology are saying we need to go back to paper ballots. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I believe that we need to have an auditable paper trail. That's right. What we must have, so that we can be able to verify the voter's will. That's what we must do. And as
what
I said,
people,
in Georgia, yeah, we don't have that.
Well, what should people do in Georgia who might have these problems with the machines?
Basically, get one of the poll workers there to in fact, verify what is happening, that their vote is not being represented by this machine. And then that machine needs to be removed from the polling station and replaced with one that does work. And again, what is so infuriating is that you have the man who is in charge of elections and has a vested interest in the outcome of this election, sitting on top of this election, and with all kinds of chicanery going on. I mean, this is why Jimmy Carter is like, man, recuse yourself. That is
right.
What integrity requires. And Kemp, clearly, we've got, just a few days left, is not going to do that. But if he had been a responsive and responsible Secretary of State, this issue with non-audible trails, with easily hackable machines, would have been dealt with years ago.
Hmm. You write about how the Supreme Court's decision to gut the Voting Rights Act in 2013 had a negative impact on the right to vote almost immediately.
Yes.
And isn't it amazing to think about Chief Justice John Roberts' main decision, that the kind of racism that led to the Voting Rights Act is no longer in play?
Right.
Right? And that was his main argument.
That was his main argument. And I'm like, son, where do you live? I want that address. So, for instance, in Alabama was what they called a preclearance state under the Voting Rights Act. It had to send up all of its changes to its voting laws to the Department of Justice because it had a demonstrated history of racial discrimination against its citizens. And Alabama, in 2011, passed a voter ID law that was racially discriminatory, but it was still under DOJ preclearance, and they let it sit. And what I mean by racially discriminatory is that the Republicans had actually recorded themselves saying, how do we depress the black voter turnout? You know, because what we're afraid of is that you're going to have all of these illiterates and all of these aborigines getting on these HUD-financed buses and going to the polls. So you have this racially discriminatory intent. And so they know that they can't get that law through a DOJ preclearance. But the moment that Shelby County v. Holder, which was the Supreme Court decision that gutted the Voting Rights Act's preclearance statute section, then Alabama implemented that law. That is the one where you don't have public housing ID acceptable. That is the one where they shut down the Department of Motor Vehicles. And it only took, and it was toward the waning years of the Obama administration, where they weighed in and Alabama begrudgingly said, okay, we'll open some of them up for 1 day a month and another ones for 2 days a month. That's hardly the kind of access that people need in order to get access to their voting rights. And again, I've got to say, this whole voter ID thing is all predicated on the lie of voter fraud. And what do I mean by that? Yes. Justin Levitt, a law professor out of California, did a study from 2000 to 2014, and he found that out of 1 billion votes cast in the United States, there were only 31 cases over 15 years of voter impersonation fraud. 31 cases. Yep. So two a year. That's hardly the widespread rampant that we consistently hear from the Republicans in order to justify creating these barriers to the voting booth. Also, when you have folks like Chris Kobach having to go before a judge and prove that there is massive rampant voter fraud, for him, he said, we've got all of these non-citizens voting. And she said, really, show me. And he couldn't. He couldn't. Mm-hmm. He had a total of like 9 cases, and only one of which dealt with someone who was a non-citizen. But this man was being naturalized in the process of getting his citizenship, and he thought he could vote. So it wasn't even this kind of malicious deliberate. Even the key voter suppressors, when called by a court of law to prove it, cannot. Greg Abbott in Texas couldn't prove it. That's how we know it's a lie, but these barriers are there. And so you hear when Phyllis Young is talking about, now we've got all of this these mechanisms we have to put in place to try to then craft IDs that have addresses on them. For what? Has the North Dakota legislature been able to justify the thousands of dollars and the thousands of hours that people have spent on this? No.
Carol, I hate to cut in, but we have just a minute left. And I just want to ask you, I mean, we talk about this on a regular basis, but it's overwhelming to the point where you almost feel pain in your chest, right? Because think about where we are. I mean, lives are being so affected by this administration.
Absolutely.
You lay out an argument that is backed up by facts that Donald Trump won because of voter suppression. How do you deal with this? What do we do with this information?
We vote them out. And that is why I have that chapter called The Resistance in the book, where Alabama applied every method of voter suppression against this black population. And in that Doug Jones-Roy Moore battle, the black population, working with civil society, rose up and outvoted Moore's proponents and ensured that there would be no Senator Roy Moore. That's how we have to do it.
Right, because people have to turn out in massive, massive numbers because of all of this voter suppression, the gerrymandering, the machines. They've got to turn out in massive numbers, right?
Exactly, exactly. We will win. When we vote, we win. That is why they suppress.
Well, Carol, thank you so much for all of the work that you do. We would love to have you back to talk more about this. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rose.
Carol Anderson is professor of African American Studies at Emory University and author of many books, including One Person, No Vote, How Voter Suppression is Destroying Our Democracy. She argues that Donald Trump won the presidential election due to voter suppression. Please share her work with all of your colleagues, friends, networks, and tell people to get out and vote. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about how money and politics is affecting the election. The Center for Responsive Politics projects that more than $5 billion will be spent on November's election. We're going to talk about who's spending the money and what is the status on efforts to take money out of politics. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance, who's running the board. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.